perfection. But when you place a rose on the center of a cross, you create another symbol entirely, the rose cross. Galloway reclined in his chair, smiling.
My, my, now you're cooking.
Catherine stood now, too. What am I missing? The rose cross, Langdon explained, is a common symbol in Freemasonry. In fact, one of the degrees of the Scottish Rite is called Knights of the Rose Cross and honors the early Rosicrucians, who contributed to Masonic mystical philosophy. Peter may have mentioned the Rosicrucians to you. Dozens of great scientists were members, John Dee, Elias Ashmole, Robert Fludd.
Absolutely, Catherine said. I've read all of the Rosicrucian manifestos in my research.
Every scientist should, Langdon thought. The Order of the Rose Cross, or more formally, the ancient and mystical order Rosae Crucis, had an enigmatic history that had greatly influenced science and closely paralleled the legend of the ancient mysteries. Early sages possessing secret wisdom that was passed down through the ages and studied by only the brightest minds. Admittedly, history's list of famous Rosicrucians was a who's who of European Renaissance luminaries. Paracelsus, Bacon, Fludd, Descartes, Pascal, Spinoza, Newton, Leibniz. According to Rosicrucian doctrine, the order was built on esoteric truths of the ancient past truths, which had to be concealed from the average man, and which promised great insight into the spiritual realm. The Brotherhood's symbol had blossomed over the years into a flowering rose on an ornate cross, but it had begun as a more modest dotted circle on an unadorned cross. The simplest manifestation of the rose on the simplest manifestation of the cross.
Peter and I often discuss Rosicrucian philosophy, Galloway told Catherine.
As the dean began outlining the interrelationship between Masonry and Rosicrucianism, Langdon felt his attention drawn back to the same nagging thought he'd had all night. Jehova Sanctus Unus. This phrase is linked to alchemy somehow. He still could not remember exactly what Peter had told him about the phrase, but for some reason the mention of Rosicrucianism seemed to have rekindled the thought.
Think, Robert.
The Rosicrucian founder, Galloway was saying, was allegedly a German mystic who went by the name Christian Rosenkreutz, a pseudonym, obviously, perhaps even for Francis Bacon, who some historians believe founded the group himself, although there is no proof of
a pseudonym, Langdon declared suddenly, startling even himself.
That's it. Jehova Sanctus Unus. It's a pseudonym.
What are you talking about? Catherine demanded.
Langdon's pulse had quickened now. All night I've been trying to remember what Peter told me about Jehova Sanctus Unus and its relationship to alchemy. Finally I remembered, it's not about alchemy so much as about an alchemist, a very famous alchemist. Galloway chuckled.
It's about time, Professor. I mentioned his name twice and also the word pseudonym.
Langdon stared at the old dean.
You knew?
Well, I had my suspicions when you told me the engraving said Jehova Sanctus Unus and had been decrypted using Dürer's alchemical magic square, but when you found the rose cross, I was certain. As you probably know, the personal papers of the scientist in question included a very heavily annotated copy of the Rosicrucian manifestos.
Who? Catherine asked.
One of the world's greatest scientists, Langdon replied. He was an alchemist, a member of the Royal Society of London, a Rosicrucian, and he signed some of his most secretive science papers with a pseudonym, Jehova Sanctus Unus.
One true God? Catherine said. Modest guy.
Brilliant guy, actually, Galloway corrected. He signed his name that way because, like the ancient adepts, he understood himself as divine. In addition, because the 16 letters in Jehova Sanctus Unus could be rearranged to spell his name in Latin, making it a perfect pseudonym.
Catherine now looked puzzled.
Jehova Sanctus Unus is an anagram of a famous alchemist's name in Latin?
Langdon grabbed a piece of paper and pencil off the dean's desk, writing as he talked. Latin interchanges the letters J for I and the letter V for you, which means Jehova Sanctus Unus can actually be perfectly rearranged to spell this man's name.
Langdon wrote down 16 letters. Isaacus Newtonius. He handed the slip of paper to Catherine and said, I think you've heard of him.
Isaac Newton? Catherine demanded, looking at the paper. That's what the engraving on the pyramid was trying to tell us?
For a moment, Langdon was back in Westminster Abbey, standing at Newton's pyramidical tomb, where he had experienced a similar epiphany. And tonight, the great scientist surfaces again. It was no coincidence, of course. The pyramids, mysteries, science, hidden knowledge, it was all intertwined. Newton's name had always been a recurring guidepost for those seeking secret knowledge. Isaac Newton, Galloway said, must have something to do with how to decipher the meaning of the pyramid. I can't imagine what it would be, but...
Genius! Catherine exclaimed, her eyes going wide. That's how we transform the pyramid.
You understand? Langdon said.
Yes, she said. I can't believe we didn't see it. It has been staring us right in the face. A simple alchemical process. I can transform this pyramid using basic science, Newtonian science.
Langdon strained to understand.
Dean Galloway, Catherine said. If you read the ring, it says,
Stop! The old dean suddenly raised his finger in the air and motioned for silence. Gently, he cocked his head to the side, as if he were listening to something. After a moment, he stood abruptly.
My friends, this pyramid obviously has secrets left to reveal. I don't know what Ms. Solomon is getting at, but if she knows your next step, then I have played my role. Pack up your things and say no more to me. Leave me in darkness for the moment. I would prefer to have no information to share, should our visitors try to force me.
Visitors? Catherine said, listening. I don't hear anyone.
You will, Galloway said, heading for the door. Hurry.
Across town, a cell tower was attempting to contact a phone that lay in pieces on Massachusetts Avenue. Finding no signal, it redirected the call to voicemail.
Robert, Warren Bellamy's panicked voice shouted. Where are you? Call me. Something terrible is happening.
Chapter 86. In the cerulean glow of his basement lights, Malach stood at the stone table and continued his preparations. As he worked, his empty stomach growled. He paid no heed. His days of servitude to the whims of his flesh were behind him. Transformation requires sacrifice. Like many of history's most spiritually evolved men, Malach had committed to his path by making the noblest of flesh sacrifices.